These days, there's so much news, it can be hard to keep up with what it all means for you, your family, and your community. The Consider This podcast from NPR features our award-winning journalism. 6 days a week, we bring you a deep dive on a news story and provide the context and analysis that helps you make sense of the news. We get behind the headlines. We get to the truth. Listen to the Consider This podcast from NPR.
Hello and welcome to the Georgia Today podcast. Here we bring you the latest reports from the GPB newsroom. On today's episode, protests against President Donald Trump take place across Georgia. A clinical trial aims to address the state's high rates of HIV. And knowing the difference between flooding terms could help keep you safe in an emergency.
We do have on our website under coastalgadnr.org, we do have a whole list of flood terms.
Today is Friday, July 18th. I'm Orlando Montoya, and this is Georgia Today. Protests and events against President Donald Trump's policies, including mass deportations and cuts to Medicaid and other safety net programs for the poor, took place at locations across Georgia yesterday. The National Day of Action, called Good Trouble Lives On, was held in honor of the late Georgia Congressman John Lewis. GPB's Sarah Callis reports from an event in Atlanta.
Hundreds of demonstrators marched down Auburn Avenue to protest the Trump administration and honor the late U.S. Representative John Lewis. The march concluded with a rally where ACLU Georgia Executive Director Andrea Young said the crowd must continue Lewis's legacy.
John Lewis took that torch over the Edmund Pettus Bridge. We are still carrying that torch until our multiracial democracy is what he envisioned it to be.
The demonstration also marked the five-year anniversary of Lewis's death. For GPB News, I'm Sarah Callis in Atlanta.
Events were planned in other metro Atlanta cities, and in southeast Georgia, Savannah resident Ann Fenstermacher attended the rally in her city.
I'm unhappy with the Republican stance on things. The current administration has alienated our allies, has turned the clock back for the United States years and years and years, and I don't know how long it's going to take to get that momentum back.
The phrase "good trouble" was coined by Lewis, the youngest and last survivor of the Big Six civil rights activists, a group led by the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. The deadly flooding in Texas reminds us just how quickly storms can trigger severe flooding. But devastation from high water can happen anywhere, including Georgia. Last year's hurricanes Debbie and Helene caused significant damage. We have flash flooding, river flooding, and coastal flooding that can lead to flood watches, warnings, and emergencies. But what's the difference between these terms? Knowing them can keep you safe. So this week, I spoke with Jennifer Klein, the coastal hazard specialist with the Department of Natural Resources in Brunswick. I asked her to define my most troublesome term, flash flooding.
We do have on our website under coastalgadnr.org, we do have a whole list of flood terms. So I would encourage, you know, anyone to check it out. These have been identified as terms that we wanted to make sure it's consistent among professionals so that they are using the same terms. But flash flood, it's potentially life-threatening. It's usually water going into a typically dry area. For instance, on the coast, it's those roads. Our roads are typically dry. And when you have a quick downpour of rain, that creates flash flooding because the water can't move fast enough. And we don't want people to drive through that. A 6-inch rain event could carry a car away or an adult away. And that can happen pretty quickly.
So tell me about the difference between a flash flood warning and a flash flood emergency and what action people should take in each of those.
Well, so the first phase would be a flood watch that the National Weather Service would issue. And that just says that there is a potential. The conditions are there for that to happen potentially. The warning is it's happening, and so it's imminent.
And then we get that flash flood emergency alert. Happens while we're driving. It happens when we're at home. What action should you take when you get one of those?
If you get something along those lines, it's really just emphasizing the need to stay indoors from where a lot of this is happening.
But I'm driving. Should I pull over?
Well, I would say no. Same instance when you get those across on your phone for a tornado, it's get to your destination and then get somewhere safe.
NOAA has predicted another above normal Atlantic hurricane season this year. So what should listeners know about flash flooding and hurricanes?
Sure. You know, one thing we haven't talked about is here on the coast is our high tides. One of the terms that we discourage people from using is king tide. King tide is a non-scientifically defined term. And so when people use it, they use it to mean different things. We encourage people to use higher than high tide flooding. And then when we also have hurricanes, we have that storm surge that is coming up from the ocean. And so a lot of times we can have high tide flooding event with the storm surge. And so just knowing that those levels are even higher.
I mean, yeah, I lived on the coast for 23 years, so living in Savannah. So when I moved here to Atlanta, I really didn't appreciate at first the flooding risk here in Atlanta because those creeks can rise, that rain can fall. And, you know, we've seen news events where people are getting washed away. So it can happen anywhere.
Absolutely. I think one thing that's important is to really kind of talk to your family and talk about where some of those flood prone areas would be in your normal routine and know what the watches and the warning signals are, and those evacuation routes are really important, as we saw with Helene that impacted the entire state of Georgia. And then whenever there is water over a road, turn around. Do not go through it. Even if it seems like a couple of inches, especially here on the coast, you might be driving through salt water and you don't even know it.
Well, this has been incredibly informative and important. And I thank you very much for talking with me today.
Yeah, thank you for asking.
That was Jennifer Klein, Coastal Hazard Specialist with the Department of Natural Resources in Brunswick. Governor Brian Kemp has suspended the mayor of a small South Georgia city who's facing felony charges stemming from efforts to halt a local election after one of the mayor's allies was disqualified from a city council race. Kemp's executive order yesterday suspends Mayor Kelvin Owens of Camilla, about 30 miles south of Albany. Owens and two other officials were charged with election interference and conspiracy to commit election fraud. Chaos roiled special elections in Camilla last November amid a long-running legal battle over local politics in the town, a farming community of about 5,000 people. A clinical trial in Georgia aims to address the state's high rates of HIV. GPB's Ellen Eldridge reports the so-called PrEP drug offers more options for preventing the disease.
The most recent data show Georgia has the highest rates of HIV in the country. Lenacapavir is the first and only PrEP, or pre-exposure prophylaxis medication, administered once every 6 months. Valeria Cantos-Lucio is one of the study's primary investigators. She says their work at the three sites in Atlanta contributed significantly to the trial by enrolling the population at highest risk for HIV.
Namely, young Black populations, including gay, bisexual, transgender, and gender non-binary people.
Butts, Early, Clayton, DeKalb, and Fulton counties have the highest rates of new HIV diagnoses in Georgia. For GPB News, I'm Ellen Eldridge.
Landowners from a tiny coastal community founded by freed slaves were back in a Georgia court today, fighting zoning changes that they say are racially discriminatory. Residents of Hog Hummock on Sapelo Island have been trying for years to overturn the changes by officials in McIntosh County. They fear the new zoning will increase their taxes and weaken protections for the mostly black and poor community. In Georgia business news, Atlanta-based Norfolk Southern and Nebraska-based Union Pacific are in merger talks to create the largest railroad in North America. A person familiar with the discussions who isn't authorized to talk about them publicly said the talks began earlier this year. Both companies declined to comment. And a James Beard Award-winning chef from Savannah has opened a restaurant in Paris. Neshama Bailey of Savannah's critically acclaimed eatery The Grey opened a cross-cultural French and Southern lunch bistro, La Ray, or The Stop, on Tuesday.
When a massive chemical fire erupted at the biolab facility in Conyers, thick smoke filled the air, forcing evacuations. But for many, it wasn't the first time, and it wouldn't be the last. I'm Pamela Kirkland. In GPB's new podcast, Manufacturing Danger, The Biolab Story, I investigate what caused the fire, the response, and what it means for Conyers residents today. Listen at gpb.org/podcast or wherever you get your podcast.
With news this week that The Late Show with Stephen Colbert will end after next season, there's a lot of talk about the future of late-night TV and what it means for political comedy. One person who works in that world is comedian and writer Mohamed El-Sheikhi. You might know him from Colbert's show or from NPR's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. The Libyan-born, New York-based comic is bringing his stand-up to a show in Atlanta this weekend. He spoke with GPB's Pamela Kirkland.
I want to start with the Atlanta show. What can folks expect to hear from you when they come to see you at City Winery?
Well, first of all, great joke. Yeah, that's what you're paying for. That's 100%. This show is mostly a lot of like personal stories and whatnot, and like about living in Portland, living in New York, growing up in Libya, all of that stuff, just like being in America and all. But like I said, overall, they're just going to have a great time.
How would you describe your comedy in your own words?
I mean, the way I would describe my stand-up comedy, like you said, it is laid back. It is chill. I'd say my style is like very plot twisty because I love plot twists. So like every joke has like an ending that is different from what one would expect, or like whatever you think the story was going, it's going into a different direction. So I try and do a lot of that. But overall, it's just like pretty chill.
You mentioned you were born in Libya and now live in New York. How have your personal experiences shaped a lot of your comedic material?
Yeah. Like you said, like I was born in Libya, and I feel like I came here to the States like 11 years ago, and as an immigrant. So a lot of it is you know, looking at America, doing outside commentary, like from someone who did not grow up here. So I think it's pointing out the absurd, because people like obviously are born here and raised here. So like a lot of the stuff they're like used to. Versus me coming at it from the outside, I'm like, I don't think this is normal. So I think when people see someone like from the outside pointing stuff like that out, they're like, oh yeah, I don't think that is normal too. And it's funny that you're bringing that up.
You've been in a lot of different spaces where comedy and politics meet, like you were writing and consulting for Love It or Leave It, that podcast. You've done Colbert and written for them. Do you think satire, political satire, is doing its job right now? Or is it just harder to keep up with the news because of the fast-paced cycle these days?
I think it is hard now, yes. And like you said, I used to write for Love It or Leave It, but now I'm doing Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me on NPR. And it is hard, because sometimes the news is just like very, very ridiculous to the point where you're just like, what am I even making fun of here? This is like... And I know it's funny, because people always like, oh yeah, jokes write themselves. I'm like, no, they do not. They do not write themselves. They take hours and hours of just looking at the news and being like, what am I even looking at right now? This is bad, or this is too absurd to even make jokes about. I think satire is like it's, we still need it, but it's just, it is just hard because like people are like not able to tell about like what is real and what's not anymore. So I feel like it's become harder to do satire because like people have to recognize it's satire, you know, and now it's very hard to recognize it's satire. So it's just like on you now to make it clear that this is a joke, we're just joking here, this is not what I actually think, or this is not the real thought process behind what's being delivered. So yeah, it is doing its job, but I feel like we need more than satire, to be honest, right now.
And now you're writing for Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, which our listeners absolutely love. What's it like working on that show that's part comedy, part current events, and part quiz show?
I love it. It's truly like maybe one of the best jobs I've ever had, like in comedy. It's just so fun. It's, the show is like, we like, obviously it does politics, but it does a lot of like also just like silly news and stuff like that. The team itself is like, everyone there is like so nice.
How is writing for Wait, Wait different from prepping for a stand-up performance?
Yeah, I mean, the main difference is whether it's like evergreen or like, you know, like you're doing now news. Like, I feel like Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, you do the joke now, next week it's old news. You can't do it again. For stand-up, like, okay, it has to be fresh. Because I'm on tour, I'm doing a tour like months and months to, like, I'm doing it until the end of the year. I'm like, people have to find these jokes funny, no matter what the time frame is. So that's why it is different. And honestly, I do, like, stand-up is always going to be the most enjoyable art form for me. I think the fun part about stand-up is that if the jokes does well, it's you who wrote it, it's you on stage. If it doesn't, you also have to take the brunt of that. But that's why it is fun. There's always that risk of like, where, especially with new jokes or like, or being at a new place, you're like, okay, I don't know how this joke is going to go. So when it does well, it's like a very, very great feeling.
Mohanad, thank you so much for speaking with me.
Thank you for having me.
That was Mohanad El-Sheikhi speaking with GPB's Pamela Kirkland. The comic will be on stage at Atlanta's City Winery this weekend. And that's it for today's edition of Georgia Today. As always, we invite you to take a look at gpb.org/news for all the latest news from our GPB reporters across the state. Refresh that page from time to time to find out what's new. If you have feedback for us, send it our way at georgiatoday@gpb.org. And as always, hit subscribe on this podcast to keep Georgia Today current in your feed. I'm Orlando Montoya. I hope you have a great weekend and come back to us next week for more Georgia Today.
These days, there's so much news, it can be hard to keep up with what it all means for you, your family, and your community. The Consider This podcast from NPR features our award-winning journalism. 6 days a week, we bring you a deep dive on a news story and provide the context and analysis that helps you make sense of the news. We get behind the headlines. We get to the truth. Listen to the Consider This podcast from NPR.